Well, I don't know if you've ever seen anyone cough up a lung, Nicola, but I don't think it fits neatly in a floor bin.
Hello.
Hello.
This episode, we are in conversation with actors Claire Cogan and Catherine Hankey to talk cheesy toes, coughing up lungs and unique styling with glow sticks as we dive into our immersive dining experience, Nightmares and Nibbles. So, Catherine, Claire, it's great to get the Nightmares and Nibbles crew back together.
Whoop, whoop. Well, it's nice women. To be meeting for Nightmares and Nibbles, but I am sad not to be in IKEA.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what IKEA. I mean, Claire, when I say that? Morning meeting in IKEA.
Oh, yes.
With meatballs. I thought you'd forgotten.
I had.
That's where we had our last Nightmares and Nibbles meeting.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, well, at least they've sent us a nice microphone to keep and
oh,
a nice headphone
seat.
It's awful nice.
So go on then, ladies. Tell us, why did you want to work on Nightmares and Nibbles?
Why do we want work?
It's cool
any work?
Money.
Oh, is it? You're not fussy. Is that what you're saying?
It's just money.
No, I go on, Claire. You go first. Smash it. And then I'll back you up.
I think for me, it was Kathy Leahy who got in touch with me and mentioned this company, Vortex Creates. And of course, then I went on and Googled and whatever. And honestly, as soon as I saw the website, that was it. I was hooked and I wanted to meet yous. And then just the whole idea about Nightmares and Nibbles, the venue, the food, the everything, it just all came together. And after meeting the pair of you, I was like, right, okay, I never, ever want to work with these two.
Never mind, we get over that.
Yeah, I got over that really quickly when you said how much it was that you were going to pay me. But, you know, and that was it for me. And then it just sort of came out of what wonderful ideas that you two had already put in place, really. Then I went for a costume fitting and that was it. Dr. Frankenstein was born.
How about you, Catherine?
Well, I had worked with the two of you on The Lost Gift with Hailey Sprong, and I guess that was done for me when that was done, because those costumes and that whole kind of setup were so good and so kind of all-encompassing and wild and audacious that I think I said to Nicola at the time when she was fitting me out with one-foot scissors, anything you ever do, like, I'll always be up for it. Because it's just so nice to work with people whose imaginations are so, like, limitless, especially in an industry where often that kind of side of things is sort of tailored out or restricted or left last in the budget. And it's just great to see people who are aesthetically a bit wild that I thought, I want as many pieces of this as I'm allowed. Like cheesecake at Christmas. So when Nightmares and Nibbles came up, that was obviously perfect. I think Nightmares and Nibbles has got a great kind of feel, because I think a lot of people do dining experiences, but they're always, I would say, quite family-friendly entertainment.
What
and
do you mean?
I think
mean,
it's a real rarity. Well, like, you know, kind of...
You mean there's no, like, cannibalism?
Yes, there's no,
yeah,
like...
there's no cheesy parts. Feet. There's no pictures of dudes in swimwear. There's no... You know,
love those dudes in swimwear.
I created that prop and I'm proud. I went into a printing shop in Cov and I asked for that 1967 Olympic team to be printed, and I'm not sorry. But yeah, I think it's just nice because you've got the kind of Fawlty Towers experience and the Only Fools and Horses experience, but it's kind of like eating at the theatre. The two things don't intersect with each other. It's kind of like nice food and there's also an experience, and it's quite linear. And I just love the way that Nightmares and Nibbles was wild. Like, it was wild. It wasn't going to be linear. The food is all part of the freakishness, and that made it feel like a kind of exciting adventure to be a part of.
I think why you felt that is because this opportunity allowed us to design our own space. We created a no-holds-barred experience from a place, yeah, where our ideas weren't barred, or rather, yeah, compromised in the usual way when we deliver to brief others.
When I walked into that small room, I mean, the hall is something, that was, but the attention to detail and what you had done in that small room blew me away. You know, when the cabinets and everything and how you changed it. I was then so excited. I was like, right, what is this going to be? And then, of course, the taxidermy came in. And that was it. We were away.
We do love a dead thing. We love a dead thing. It's one of those things, like when we were working at the cathedral in Coventry this winter, there's a pelgrim fork. Is it a Peregrine Forkin? Is that how you say
Peregrine Forkin.
I don't know what Peregrine.
Forkin. Peregrine Forkin.
You're inventing right. Again. Peregrine.
Put me false teeth back in, which also featured in the show. You know, there's a Peregrine Forkin that clearly, I can't say it, that clearly was kind of in the, like, killing loads of birds, and there was just lots of little beaks everywhere, and Maz and I just kept going, oh, look, nightmares and nibbles, we could put that in a jar.
That's it now, actually. You know, because we've run it now for three, or you've run it now for 3 years, you do sort of look around and go, oh, that'd be good. That'd be great.
Yeah. But it's also, it's not pandering to what necessarily the audience expect to see.
Yeah.
It's taking them somewhere they don't expect to go and might be viscerally uncomfortable for them. But that's like the beauty of it. That's the no holds barred. It's like you come in and you're at the mercy of someone else's imagination. And when you're doing immersive and 360 degree experiences, that's what you want. You don't want to get what you came for. You want to get something that blows your mind, like that you didn't expect or that you didn't think you'd see when you woke up that morning. And I think that's what Nightmares and Nibbles is. And that's why the people who come then want to come again, because it's like, oh my God, I almost wasn't prepared for what I was.
Well, that's it. I mean, me to try and get friends to the theatre is like, I have to bribe them with a lot of money to come and take me in anything. But this, I've had people, you know, and I'm like, you're here, this is your third time. And they're like, I'm not right, thanks. You never ever come and see me in anything else for three times. So, you know, it was never me they were coming for. It was the whole experience that they just loved. And they're actually gutted that it hasn't run again since the last time.
Yeah, last year was kind of not really the. Although it's the medicinal feel of it. You know, you could quite happily sit there in a mask, I guess.
And, yes, we've been told by a few people it could be almost the perfect
socially distant,
COVID secure experience. You know,
yeah. Oh, I don't know what Mary would have to say about that.
Well, that's the thing. I think Mary has to get.
Yeah, Mary doesn't socially distance. It's not her bag.
I guess for anybody listening, Mary is the monster in our show, but sorry.
Mary throws a lot of things. Maybe that's what COVID would do.
Mary breaks a lot of things, is what I'm going to say, Mrs. Hank.
And also just to add to that, Claire is Dr. Frankenstein. So we are all about pushing boundaries and to expect the unexpected. So it was fun to counter the stereotype of Dr. Frankenstein being male, really, and push and break those boundaries is what we're all about. And I think the initial surprise when you came down the stairs, Claire, was that the way you portrayed your character and the dress and your look, there's a really lovely, like, androgynous feel about you as well. So it's a bit like, is it a man? Like, what? And I think it was like...
Story of my life,
challenging straight away to like, the viewers, you know, they...
Yes, this is not what we expect. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Mm. No, that's true. And it's very representative of Vortex, isn't it? It's wild.
Yeah, not woman power coming you expect. At you. Yeah, and that's another thing as well, obviously. You know, we're all women. You know, that appealed to me as well, was the fact that, you know, I would get to play, you know, a character called Dr. Frankenstein. I wouldn't get to do that, really, very often, if at all. But here we are.
So what was your funniest moment or best memory of Nightmares?
And it was I let Hanky Panky go first.
I was going to ask who you were coming to first. Now then. I've probably got two, because one of them's cheating a bit, because it wasn't even in the show. It was in...
it's a completely different show. None of you were there.
No, it was before the show. And obviously this moment has gone down in history where... Mary has a moment where she coughs up blood and a bit of lung, And we wanted to try and test that moment and see, you know, how are we going to get that the most believable it can be? Because, again, it's like, it's got to be perfect. It's got to make people feel like this is happening for real. And it's like a roller coaster. It only works if the only thing that tells them it's not real is their deep down subconscious. Like, if most of them believes it's real, then it works. So it had to be good, it had to be accurate. So we stood in this side beautifully decorated side room, and I practiced with a series of cling film bags. Well, this wouldn't have been an issue had we not had the perfect blood spatter, which as soon as I coughed, I saw the joy on Nicola's face, the utter ecstasy of like a perfectly timed blood cough. And then it just, as the blood sprayed on two walls and the carpet, the ecstasy turned to dread. Turned to a sprint for the carpet cleaner and some tissues. And then before we knew it, Maz and Nicola were both on their knees, and not with laughter, but with Dettol.
And so, mumbling, this is over 100, 200 years old.
Well, it was a mix.
Do you think they'll notice? Do you think they'll notice?
It was the perfect, if blood splatter was an Olympic sport, Catherine, you would have, won the medal for it, because... Yeah. That went a good few metres.
Yes. And then it was the
I think we had it recorded.
Yes. We filmed it.
We did. I was doing the recording. That was it. Yeah.
Well, I also love the fact that nobody thought, before we began blood spray practice, not one of the four of us was like, oh, maybe we should put up some, like, you know, perimeter of kitchen roll.
It wasn't a blood splatter moment. It was a coughing up blood, and there would be blood just going into the bin in front of you.
Well, I don't know if you've ever seen anyone cough up a lung, Nicola, but I don't think it fits neatly in a floor bin.
There's still tension around this. I can sense it.
I think it was still genius, but, you know, obviously it was disallowed for the show due to historical preservation of the building. So.
It was a really good position for
the taxidermy.
But so that was my favourite moment, but technically it wasn't in the show. So my other favourite moment will have been when I accidentally bruised the wrist of a fellow performer who's a dancer by throwing two barrels at her instead of the one we'd agreed. Because I just found myself a little angrier in that moment than I said I'd be.
At the end of that show, builds, doesn't it, throughout the kind of experience. And then at the end, it is proper Mary goes mad. I just remember being backstage on my own in this darkened backstage area with this little light, and all I could see was you rocking in the corner facing the wall. And just thinking, oh.
Yeah, you've got to reach those hard to reach places, and with one eye as well, which is what I've got at that part of the show. With one eye and the lady who runs the bar trying to stay out of my way. Probably because she feels my rage. And I love that part of the show. And I love that it's set up. You've just gone round with tequila and dancers. And, like, it's wild. It's like Club Tropicana. So it's like, at no point does anyone go, oh, Catherine's got to beat this with rage. We better, like, key it back so that she doesn't have to burst out of that door like a bat out of hell. But we don't. And that's what I love about it. I love the challenge of it.
Oh, I love the silence.
Well, I'm waiting for Claire to tell her best moment.
Oh, sorry,
I think she's so captivated by my story.
You'd mentioned tequila and I was gone.
Yeah, she was shopping to make sure she ordered some.
Yeah, I'm just checking for the tequila. My favourite moment is Maz. And I remember she was looking at Mary's costume and thinking, I've got some glow sticks for that. So she ran round the back of the screens. And all I heard was this huge bang, and lots of confetti and glitter came out. And then all I heard was this wee voice going, okay, that wasn't the glow sticks. And she'd, in the dark, she'd open one of those party cannons all over herself. And I mean, I was
not
so
just over herself. It's just on her thigh. Yeah, so the bruise was
and
legendary.
I do think she did hurt herself, which, you know, makes it even funnier, in my opinion. No, it doesn't, sorry. Which is terrible that I am laughing at it. But I just, for me, that was my moment of just seeing all the confetti. Oh, and that wee moment of, okay, that's not the glow sticks.
That was a moment where I, like, literally took away the show for about, like, 4 weeks, like, permanently, like, with the biggest bruise on the top of my
thigh. Love you.
Yeah, see, although the glow sticks were doomed, weren't they? Because there was also just, like, 5 minutes before curtain call with the same glow sticks going,
I know what you're gonna
say. God, we're going to have to break these glow sticks. So there I am breaking them, and one of them was clearly past its sell-by date, and the glow stick exploded in my face. So I had, like, glow stick juice in my eye.
Glow stick malfunction.
So I just had to rush through the audience up to the toilet and rinse out my eye. Ready to get back to cue the music.
I love the fact that, as well, you guys, what you're not saying is that you've decorated that hall and room to within an inch of its life. But what it really needs is three crap glow sticks to give it the 1990s feel. It was like, those rooms did not need glow sticks. I did not need a glow stick. My face was covered in injuries and bandages. Like, no, there were no glow sticks required.
Obviously, we did it for 3 years, and the first year it was a test in that space. And I think there were just a number of moments where you have designed it and you've worked with all of you to kind of make the whole environment work in terms of decor, in terms of where people are. The original Mary the Monster was the first year, and then you were the years 2 and 3, weren't you, Catherine?
I was the sequels, which would normally be considered a step down.
No, step
Die
up,
Hard,
step up.
Lethal Weapon, you know, but I mean, I bucked the trend.
Each year just gets ramped, I think, with the character of Mary in particular.
Well, I think that's the brilliant thing with the show, is every year it builds on and gets better and better, and you learn more and more. I mean, I just remember the first year, and we'd got to the end of the first performance, and in order to get the second performance in, we had to get everybody out, which is why Mary went a bit mad. So everybody starts kind of leaving the space
very quickly.
Very quickly. And, you know, we, Maz and I, clearly are lushes, because we thought, like, half a bottle of wine is okay to be drinking in an hour and a bit show. And no, clearly no one else can do that. And so walking towards me as I was ushering them out of the Grand Hall were people with pretty much half a bottle of wine left. And they were all in beakers. And we were like, well, you can't take the beaker because I need them for the next show.
We need to wash up and get them ready.
There was kind of a mad dash for plastic cups.
No, and there's no way you can take people's alcohol off them. No. You can't do that. But you very quickly realised, let's just decant and get on with it. So sent them off in paper cups or something.
But it's just that moment when the hordes of, like, 50 people are descending to you, and you've got to do something.
And that's it, isn't it?
And that was one situation glow sticks couldn't solve.
No.
You've got to do something, but not glow sticks. Challenging.
Well, we're totally over the moon to be working with both of you, but just to recall that first year, Claire, me and Nicola had planned that show to an inch of its life, as she said, but literally when we were so immersed in the setting, the managing, the cocktail shaking, you just got on and gave our show like a whole whack of personality. You would just be taking yourself off the stairs, you would be like going, adding into the script and just going, oh, I think it needs a bit of this. And then, like, you really worked with Michelle, who was like the Mary of the first year, and then when Catherine came on board, you two, like, just like, you're just amazing. I think you've got so many great shows under your belt, and you're really true professionals at what you do, that you just really bring something, the missing piece of the jigsaw that Nightmares and Nibbles needs.
Oh, that's lovely. I brought me a tear, that did. I didn't want to stop you.
Nice. Well, it's amazing that it's a two-person show. Yes, there's other character servers amongst it.
But I think it has to be, doesn't it? When it all boils down to it, even though it's horror, it's straight man, funny man. Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's
Abbott and Costello. It's those.
Yeah. The professor only works, the doctor only works if there is something trying to derail what she's doing most of the way along, because that takes her pitch higher. It takes the audience with her more. And likewise, Mary needs that structure in order to buck the trend. And I think they both require each other.
They have trust in the doctor. They see the doctor as like a mother, father figure, teacher figure, whatever. Yet they love to have the fun with Mary. Mary's the one that they, you know, especially out in the foyer before, or, you know, in the rooms before it starts. That's where they, and obviously, Catherine, that's where you pick as well, who you know is up for it. But they love having the fun with Mary. But then when I get to the table or whatever, then it's they really do listen. You know, if I impart some sort of knowledge, they're like,
they really think you know about science.
I know, I've not a clue. Like, you turban. Know, but they really take it, and thank you very much, doctor, and all of that.
That's the thing, isn't it, with the two of you? I mean, we had a plan for it and a script, but you know, that development of the script that the pair of you have done, I think that knowledge of what makes something funny, it's not just about jokes, it's about clever fun and timing and that build of humour and that kind of look. And it's not just about the words, it's about the physical presence of the pair of you. And I think for us, that's why we love collaborating with you on this. And I think it's never been the same show. And I think that's the thing with the people that come back every year. They're like, oh, it's a bit different. I'm going to come next year to see what the next thing is.
And that's true, isn't it? Because Tequila, the end, which is my favourite show. I love that,
But I think that's also the beauty of Vortex, isn't it? Is that, like, it's, I don't know whether you find this, Claire, but it is rare as well. When you're dealing with immersive, it's a whole other sport, and it's rare that people who are leading an event will let you take a hold of it and kind of run with it, even if you're very skilled at what you do. But because it's got such wide parameters, like, you can do anything bar sort of violence with the audience. So there's a lot of places you can go with it that maybe creative directors don't want to give you that kind of freedom, and there's timing issues and kind of all of that. So you don't get as much trust. And I think what's wonderful about working with you guys is that you've got that trust that we can go and we can play and we can have fun and we can do what we do. As long as you can see it and you can be a part of it, you will let us go where we want to go with it, or at least test where we think we want to go with it to see if you think it works, which I think is something that not a lot of companies do.
Yeah, and I think as well, you tweak as well. You're constantly tweaking, and you're constantly knowing what's needed and what's not. I mean, the year of the yurt for me, putting that yurt up I'll never, ever forget. But that was wonderful, you know.
No, Frankenstein
we ditched the yurt. But each year, lots of things will have changed that you've either learnt from, or that you know this is better, or you've just said, oh, I remember this. This is what, I mean, I remember Maz's face when I said to him about, you know, can we give people cake? And then I think I said, could we have like a cake bags? And her face was like, you've got all of this and now you want cake bags. But lo and behold, somewhere in some bag somewhere, out she brings these cake bags. And I was like, yes, this is brilliant. Take home cake bags.
And I think we talk about no year being the same, but the beauty of, like, of that show and of immersive theatre is that, like, no show is the same, you know. Every show feels the buzz of opening night, and, like, you're saying, how the audience react to something gives you ideas on what next, how we can improve it, or, that doesn't work. And, literally from one performance to the next.
Yeah.
What used to amaze me was the people who dressed up. I loved that. I thought, oh, this is great. You know, or sometimes, you know, you had the people who'd had a few too many. And Catherine was great with them.
You can keep them under control, though.
Well, yeah, yes.
You give as good as you get on the banter.
So some of them. You do have to weigh up. And I know that Catherine was weighing up these people all, you know, before we go in, and I know she's got a handle on it, and she knows where to go, you know, who to talk to and all of that, which is great. I don't have to do any of that. I just have to come in and give a lecture.
But I think they also sense our fearlessness, because I think the more times you've done this, the more you're ready for. And I think even the kind of rowdy, drunken audience members, it's kind of very soon into the show when they realise that we're happy to go with them, like, and we would be prepared to derail it all for them if that's what we wanted to do. And I think as soon as they know that we're as up for it as they are, it's kind of, we're all in it together then.
Well, yeah,
you don't get those people who would derail it despite us.
And I think it shows that the show works because, you know, if you get people who are coming in and they're like, right, come on, entertain me, you know, and if you don't, they will let you know, and nobody's ever gone down that route. It's always, we can always manage to engage them with some part of it, be it the food, be it the lecture, be it the characters, whatever.
We've got to say as well, you could not fail to be amazed by that food. It's absolutely stunning.
Oh, it's, yes, absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, I still stay and look at the cake after the show is done. Like,
after
2 years of doing it, 5 nights or whatever, I still sit and look at those cakes at the end.
Well,
and
I have Miss Ellie on my Facebook, and the things that she creates are just phenomenal.
They're full of wonder.
Yeah, oh, Miss absolutely. Ellie is an amazing food artist in Coventry, and the cake that is being spoken about is actually a bloody brain cake.
And how she makes it look like a bloodied brain, and I don't know, because it's so good.
But and what people cannot get their heads around is the whole thing is vegan. And that is what I cannot get my head around either. You eat a body, that's what I say to people, you know, you're going to eat, you're going to do, what is it, nose to tail, you're going to eat the body or whatever, and they're like, oh, I don't know about that, whatever. Yeah, but the good thing is it's all vegan.
Tuck in those intestines, get them down you.
God. Yeah, no excuses for not trying it.
And I also think as well, there's a lot of people that come who haven't experienced vegan food and who would, you know, probably, I mean, I'm a meat eater and I would probably be like, oh, well, you know, if there's no meat there or whatever. But they go away going, I can't believe how tasty that food was.
It was a really hard one for us to market in that sense because it's a show seller, but equally it's like Marmite with people as well. Mm. And, you know, we did have that reaction for some people. We were like, why they wouldn't come to the show was, oh, it's vegan. And you're like, oh, no, but it's more than that.
And it's probably that a lot of vegans don't want to eat isn't it? Either.
And let's face it, you know, cannibalism is frowned upon. Yeah, so,
within the vegan community.
Well, I think in general, the whole of the world, cannibalism is frowned upon, Catherine. I don't think it's
not just in the vegan community.
I think it's pretty much illegal most places.
Unless you're Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, true. I mean, maybe I've spent too long with the doctor. It's all feeling not as bad as it did.
Vegan
is just a part of that inclusivity. It's not a part of a statement.
That probably should be how we move forward with that, actually. Just promote it as a cannibal.
Yeah.
Cannibalism show.
And if they ask, then you can say, but yeah, I think it is that thing of like, yes, you are going to experience some body parts, mind you.
Straight face. You know.
Let's face it, the cheesy toes.
The cheesy toes, you,
that
Nicola,
is the thing.
You love
it. Sets everybody up, doesn't it? In a kind of, oh my goodness.
Absolutely.
Like,
Nicola can roll those nails. In her sleep now for years.
I mean, the fact that you went off and you made a plaster of Paris of your own foot. And then, you know, stuck cheesy toes. That's just how your minds work amazes me. Mm. You know, I don't have that creativity.
Amazes Claire or slightly frightened?
A bit of both.
I feel like I've sculpted quite a few hundred cheesy toes now. I always remember Maz's dad, Mr. T, good old shout out to good old Mr. T, coming along. You know, he's quite a strong stomached man. It was just when he said he looked at the picture on the lecture that was like this painted foot, and then the cheesy foot was revealed, and suddenly the smell hit you, the look of it hit you, the amazing crispy toenail hit you, and he just couldn't face another morsel of food.
And that was it. He'd put the two things together, and I think that's the reason that the slides work so well as well. As people are going, oh geez, all right.
But I think it's good to say as well, it's quite dark. It's hard sometimes for people who haven't been to understand, and that's another thing that I love about it, is there's a great tradition of immersive shows and often kind of very comic shows, but the dark, bleak comedy is a lot rarer and it's a lot braver because sometimes it's more guttural or it's more emotional. And I think Mary goes on that journey and it provides so many more layers, because there is always that thing with any scientist or professor, there's like a darkness there, which is the value of human life and what you're prepared to do and what you're not prepared to do. And we can choose not to go there with the professor and for her just to do a lovely lecture and for us to have a nice evening. But we're not. We're choosing to go to that dark space and inhabit it unashamedly for a bit. I mean, I love black comedy and I think it would be an opportunity missed if we didn't. And I like the fact that it's not just banter and funniness. There's also, it takes you to that slightly uncomfortable space of what are we talking about here, and what is the price of science, and who deserves to be cared for and who doesn't. And the kind of Mary the Monster raises all those questions, and those are true to the kind of the themes of what you're trying to put out, I think.
In modern day world, like when you watch TV adverts, there's all those kind of adverts that this made up name of a chemical is going to reduce your wrinkles or give you a nip and a tuck. And actually, why can't eating the veins of athletic swimmers give you a bit of oomph in your oomph in your daily?
And it gives the professor that dark edge as well, because it's kind of all very silly, but then it's like she really won't let Mary have a friend. And that's, it's kind of like all those great, kind of the tradition of great stories, like, you know, Rapunzel or Cinderella, or there's a real dark edge of like what is right and what is wrong and what is kind of slightly disturbing if you really think about it closely. You know, Grim fairy tales and all that.
Well, that's it, isn't it? I mean, Mary is a captive, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So totally. And at the same time as being the slick and smooth presenter of the whole night, the professor is keeping her captive. So it's like, whose side are you on? And that's what it poses, really, because they want to be on the professor's side.
Even more.
Yeah, well, they want to be with the point of comfort and authority, and then you upturn it and they're not sure whose side they're on.
Well, and actually, I think you're right that at some point they do pick sides. They do decide, no, I like Mary. Or some are like, no, I'm going with the professor.
But it raises that complexity, and that's what makes it more than just a kind of a good laugh, you know, which is great and we love. But it's those kind of things that transcend a bit and put a bit of bathos in it.
And I think Mary wins like the audience over, whether, even if they were on Dr. Franken's side.
Absolutely.
With the blood bag moment, like Catherine, as Mary, you were brilliant at that, where the blood bags are drunk and it contains a love potion. So like the next person you see, you fall in love with and you're lap hoppity hopping. And it's a really fun part of the show. That.
Well, it's the big, oh, you know, when she's made to leave. Like, oh, I'm like, oh, shut up. She's a nightmare. Get her out.
Yeah, you feel like compassion for Mary. Then you're like, she's like us. Go
but
away,
really, she isn't, is she? Mary is like one of the only creations out there with that deep-rooted madness, I guess.
So, ladies, just to add a little bit of fun to this, if you could take Nightmares and Nibbles to any venue in the world, where would you like to take it? And I'm not thinking about holiday destinations where you're on holiday next, Claire, but
Disneyland, because I've always wanted to go.
In the Disneyland castle, it would be great. Could you imagine?
Go on, Claire, I'll let you answer that one first.
Originally, I thought the, you know, the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang Castle in Bavaria. Yeah. And I just thought, oh, that would be great. Mm. But then again, I thought, maybe that's a bit too obvious. So then I was starting to think of maybe somewhere like outside, like in a forest, so the Black Forest or something like that, because then the lighting gets a lot more atmospheric and stuff. I would love to see it in Belfast.
Okay.
There's a lot of immersive theatre going on in Belfast now, and I think, you know, the audience would be up for it. And there's a castle in Belfast, Belfast Castle, it's called, strangely enough.
But
there's also, look it up, everybody. Castle in Belfast, Belfast Castle. But there are also quite a lot of ruins and places like that in Belfast that I would love to see it in. Of course, we would have to deal with the rain.
Just book it in a week where there's no rain. It's fine.
Well, yeah. Good luck finding that. Northern. I just think that an Irish audience would absolutely adore it.
You've basically stolen mine already, because I had, this was the one question we got asked in advance, and I had written Bavarian Castle. How's about that? Yeah.
I think that's a sign. I think we've got to make that happen.
I think you need to contact the mayor of Bavaria and just ask. For the same reason, that kind of gothic-y feel. But I agree with you, actually, Claire, that there's easy places to take it, like anywhere gothic is like easy. Mm-hmm. Mm. But also, I think you can, I agree, you can push it. Like, I was also reminded of the kind of the caves in Edinburgh and that kind of whole underground street that they've got there. And that kind of anything that makes people feel slightly out of their comfort zone, I think is perfect. Like, be it outdoors in the dark, be it in a subterranean place,
It's the Vortex's ability to make anywhere fit their show and to use what's there. And that's what I'd like to see, I think, you know.
And it's about how you transform. The stuff is so visceral that it's about a feeling. So I think anywhere that gives you that slightly uncomfortable feeling, it will be built from that. And it kind of doesn't matter on the aesthetic of the place, more
what you're trying
you
to say is that you want to challenge us.
I mean, I don't think you've been challenged.
It's always a challenge. You know, you two would step up to anything, you know.
So
we'd like to do it under the sea.
Yeah.
Or in the Hickson Boson Tunnel.
I'd like to see Miss Ellie baking brain cakes outside in the jungle, if that's possible. Yeah. Because, you know, why not?
I think with yourselves, with the servers, you know, the wonderful Emily, Niall, Meg, all of those, actually, everybody was up for making it happen. It's like, oh, there's an hour turnaround in the show and you've got to reset, you know, all of the place settings and you've got to do this. And everybody was up for that. That's what it's about, that being part of something that brings joy and fun and laughter to other people. And it's a really hard work, isn't it?
You know,
two shows a night is really tough going. But all of us had a slightly frazzled but still a smile on our...
But it's because it's
can-do people.
Yeah, but I think everybody who works on the show knows how good it is. Mm. It feels like that underground thing that maybe a lot of people haven't heard of, but the people who come absolutely love it. And I think it's
own reward,
isn't it? I just
definitely think there's some... The sombreros and the light up maracas, I think, and the tequila moment definitely was something
that
everybody built to.
I love it.
Yes,
I would really like to see the professor have concealed fairy lights in her turban for that bit. I'd like to see her light up like a Christmas tree.
There we go. Yes. That's the one.
I tell you what it needs.
Glow sticks. Nicola's eye hasn't seen enough glow stick juice action this last year.
That's for the party
camera. Thank you, Claire Cogan and Catherine Hankey. Keep up to date with their acting capers at clairecogan.com and Catherine the Hankey on Twitter. We'll see you in a couple of weeks in conversation with Mark Clark from Combus. We've been invited to Sunday lunch and we can't wait.
In the meantime, if you need anything from us across the social, you can follow us on our handle at Vortex Creates and subscribe in your app so you don't miss an episode.
Bye.
Bye for now.
Bye. Bye.